Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is November 20th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Upcoming events, nothing till spring currently planned. However, we're working on the report from the Free and Inspired Workshop in California. And one of the things we're discussing is the idea of doing, instead of doing luncheons with Catherine around the country, doing a day with Catherine, shooting to do one a month or every other month, sort of extend lunch to an all-day affair, because that really gives you a chance to meet each other. And that's what I keep hearing. There's just immense joy in getting to know people who share the philosophy of let's face reality, but let's get something done positively. And we want to help facilitate that process. So more on that as we prepare the report. Our theme tonight is not our favorite one. It's called Exercising Control Through Character Assassination. And we're seeing the mud fly all over the planet. It's extraordinary. Two of the most important stories up on the blog this week. David Cameron of the UK at the end of the G20 meeting came out with a warning on serious problems in the global financial system. I expect that's a 2015 problem, but it's one we're going to have to think about and get prepared for. So consider I'm preparing to lower the chances that the slow burn remains intact and we could see some real rough patches here. The reason I feel that way is not because of what Cameron said, but at the same time, we get two stories about sex scandals, pedophilia. Those are the toughest fights and the toughest control files up on the blog. You'll see them. One is British, under wildcards, British pedophilia scandal. I saw Tory MP kill boy at sex party. This relates to activities in the 80s and 90s. That in alone, that was in the Sydney Morning Herald. But the thing that really struck me was there was one called Historical Abuse Inquiry Police Examined Possible Homicide. BBC doesn't name names. It was it was clearly rushed out on November 14th. Cameron's article was on the 17th and the Sydney Morning Herald was on the 17th. Clearly rushed out. That's the kind of story you rush out. And again, it's about 70s and 80s. When you want to send somebody a clear message, you do what we tell you, or the witch hunt will get you. Because remember, in cases like this, they don't even have to have evidence. All you need is the investigation to touch and smear you, and you're dead. Part of this is the transition, because if it's 70s and 80s, this is all targeted at the old Turks. So it looks like to me like some old Turks and some young Turks are really enforcing. Those kinds of enforcement happen when people are really scared. So I take that as a warning that we could come into real liquidity problems, or they're worried about it right now. It doesn't mean things can't get fixed. And that in combination with the article that I quoted, head of the CFR, Richard Haass, wrote a very interesting article called The Unraveling at Subscriber Only, so I couldn't put it up on the blog. But he really talks about a deterioration in the world order. Again, he doesn't credit the United States with what they've done to contribute to that with the so-called soft revolutions and other covert actions. So, but if I had to guess today, if I had to do the annual report today, I would say that particularly outside the Anglo-American alliance, the chances that the slow burn continues smoothly is down to about 60%. So we'll see what the final number is when we do the wrap up. On January 8th. We're working on it already, and we're really looking forward to that. But you can tell when you start slinging mud on pedophilia scandals that there's no time for real policy arguments. It's all down to the sleazy smear. Although when you bring up murder, there's no statute of limitations on murder. So that's a very serious allegation. Now, the sex scandals are revving up not just on the European side of the Atlantic, on our side of the Atlantic as well. New documentary reviewed. I haven't watched it, on Hollywood sexual abuse. Again, more stuff on kids. Now we see NBC Universal dumping Bill Cosby's sitcom, which was in planning because of extensive allegations of rape and a number of people coming forward. And if you sort of take a look at it, it looks to me like whether there's any gem of truth or not, There's a lot of sleaze and lying going on. So a real targeting of Bill Cosby looks to me like somebody wants to get out of a contract. But it's a hell of a way to negotiate. And then Will Smith's kid slammed. I also put that up. And so, interestingly enough, the Bill Cosby happens just as his art collection opens at Smithsonian. It wouldn't surprise me if more than a few people over at Langley are jealous. But between these three stories and the Ebola and then what was happening with Kill the Messenger and Dark Alliance and the divide and conquer politics going down on Ferguson, it really does look this week like war on African Americans, or over the last month, I should say. It wouldn't surprise me. When Hamilton was working for HUD as lead financial advisor, one of the political appointees at HUD said, "Oh, well, you know, we've given up on African Americans. We're planning on moving Hispanics in, and you know, just moving the African Americans out." And it's interesting that this should all be happening coming into the president's immigration plan, which I believe he's announcing it as we speak. He was going to announce it at. He should have already announced it. It was going to be 8 o'clock Eastern. So the food fight will be on there. But if you look at the numbers of Latin Americans who are coming across the border, and this is going to encourage many more, you're going to see quite a wave. And it's not surprising that at the same time we see a wave of them coming in, targeting on the African Americans. More than a few commentators thinking that the effort to cook up the Ferguson situation in Missouri is to help sort of deflect and away from what's happening with immigration. More on that when we see the specifics of what they're proposing. But if you haven't listened to the interview with Zach Taylor that we did on what is going on in the borders, I strongly recommend, because the numbers of what's coming, of who is coming across and how many people are coming across, is much greater than I think has been reported in the press. As I said, no time for real policy arguments. Instead, it's down to sleazy smears. The 2016 election is now gearing up, with the 2014 midterm elections over in the United States. This one is it's cooking up to be pretty sleazy. If you haven't taken a look at Sam Smith's Clinton Chronicles, as well as some of his Bush Chronicles at Progressive Review, go ahead and do it, because there's quite a lot to show you. This is a crowd that is used to fighting dirty. Indications of that are what happened to Christie and Cuomo coming into the election, being slapped with serious investigations by the Department of Justice. Please pay attention to local elections. Ignore the national. The national, I assure you, is going to be in many respects very irrelevant, but very ugly. Part of the problem is media. What you're watching in the media is an effort. You're watching an absolute walk away by massive amounts of the market, the reader, from print, whether newspapers or magazines, and everybody's getting onto the mobile platform. And so you're having a wide number of players, from cable to TV to print media, having to squeeze onto that little mobile phone, little relative to some of the other platforms they're coming through. In the process, they're losing market share. The only guys gaining are the social media guys. Everybody else, Weibo is skyrocketing. But you know, most of the media is losing market share and losing cash flows as they try and shrink into the mobile platform. And that's part of what's causing the shriek-o-meter to get louder and louder. When you combine that with, sort of campaign managers and covert operations that they run coming into big campaigns, then you're gonna get some really, it's an evil cocktail. Anyway, the good news is we have the power to turn it off. So turn it off and get inspired about the authentic opportunities around you. There are gonna be a lot of them, particularly at the local level. Money in markets, treasuries back down, but they're still up 17% for the year. The S&P is up 11%. Who can believe treasuries would be the long treasuries? That's the 20-year ETF would be up the most for the year. Quite amazing. The aggregate bond ETF up 3%. Gold has bounced back a little. It's now down 1% for the year, along with the emerging markets down 1%. Many commodities really hammered. Well, if you look at the futures market, oil's down 22% for the year. Cotton is down 30%. I hadn't checked cotton recently, and then I drove back into Hickory Valley, and the Hickory Valley cotton gin, the bales of cotton were backed up, and they hadn't been ginned yet. And I thought, oh, this is not good. Clicked on, and sure enough, cotton way down. So bad time. Tough time for a lot of farmers. It will be, you know, the oil prices will make a difference to consumers. Some consumers at the pump, there's different reports. As I drove around the country and talked to people around the country, some people are getting relief at the pump, others not. It is very unlikely to offset the utility and food price increases that are coming, particularly in the winter months. So more slow burn. That's just going to feed keeping the slow burn going. The Fed opted more announcements and indications from the Fed that they're going to stay on course with global concerns. And I really encourage you to watch, read the commentary I posted last week. It's off the homepage now, but you can pick it up if you click back, called Watch the US Dollar Index. I continue to be very worried about a dollar trap globally that's going to drive the dollar up and be supportive of keeping the US stock market strong, but really send the economy in many parts of the country and the world into a real serious squeeze that's going to support the continuation of US power globally. I posted a little commentary on the markets this week. It's called It's Been That Kind of Year. Let me read it to you. The S&P is up 11% to date. Alibaba is up 18% from its IPO in September. Lockheed Martin, the prime contractor for the national security state, is up 25% year to date. And Apple is up 44%. It looks like military operations are worth more than growing food and making and distributing things. However, owning people's mobile payment systems and shopping is worth even more. Again, the winners on who, you know, that squeeze into the mobile platform are the big winners so far in the equity markets. An interesting story from Bloomberg called If You Want to Pretend Your Stocks Are Buildings, Now You Can. You heard it here first. If you look at what the human interface with digital technology and software is going to do over the next 2 to 3 years, it's really going to be very dramatic in its impact on a variety of different activities and functions. But to the extent that brokerage firms give investors the power to use virtual reality and very dynamic graphical software to look at and track the markets, it's going to contribute to the crash up that I keep talking as one of the scenarios to be prepared for. The big story this week, though, is not in the financial markets, in the weather. I posted a commentary this week called Hunker Down Times. Let me just read it to you. As I drove east last week, I told a colleague that I was driving from no water to no warmth. The economic impact of the drought in California and the Southwest and the cold in North America is growing. The patterns play out around the world. Strange weather around the world, folks. Charles Waters, founder of Acres USA, described the relationship between farm income and GNP in his book, Unforgiven. This weather and low commodity prices means tough times ahead for farmers. That means more consolidation of valuable farmland. The human suffering is notable. Smaller harvests, falling incomes mean people cannot afford energy or proper food. When I drove through Phoenix, each of 12 corners at a major intersection had a beggar. They were attractive, many well-educated in appearance, and scared. Hunker down times are here. I just finished refinancing my mortgage, got a new generator, and fired up with a big gas heater in the living room, and I'm wearing my parkas indoors. I handed out $50 to the beggars en route from San Francisco to Tennessee and more on, quote, larger than 15%, quote, tips. I am a tither. I just like to place most of my tithes in the hand of my fellow man. A little bit of cash or coin is a prayer. It says, I'm for you. You can make it. What I'm saying is tough times ahead for a lot of people. Forget what happens to the global financial system. Even if the global financial system is hunky-dory, no liquidity problems, the middle class, the lower classes are getting squeezed by the slow burn. And it really comes down to this. We had a great discussion at the workshop about the current system run by force, and the alternative is one where enforcement is done individually. And we have, as a culture really grounded in what, as Joseph said, the golden rule. And so the golden rule comes down to each and every one of us. Part of living a free and inspired life is practicing it. So I encourage you to reach out and do what you can to help your fellow man, because there's a lot of really fine people who are getting squeezed and having difficulty making the transition. And your bit of cash, of coin, or a prayer can really make a difference. Please, please read an article up on the blog. Frightening, scary, but if you don't understand this and don't know it, you really need to read it. It's called The Real Reason Wheat is Toxic. And what it talks about is the fact that the major problem with wheat in America is not gluten. It's the fact that it is much easier to harvest dead wheat than living wheat. And so farmers spray Roundup and pesticides on the wheat to kill it before they harvest it. And that is what you're eating. Speaking of eating, our hero this week is one of the alternatives to spraying Roundup on wheat. NFL footballer turned farmer Jason Brown signed a 5-year, $25 million contract when it was over instead of signing up again. He retired from football, decided to become a farmer, bought a 1,000-acre farm in North Carolina, taught himself how to farm by watching videos on YouTube, which is a lot more practical than it might sound, and is now growing and giving away sweet potatoes. He says he can grow enough on his 1,000-acre farm to make sure people in his county don't go hungry during this period. And, you know, I got to tell you, the guy's got a beautiful spirit. So take a look at the link up on the blog. It's a very inspiring little video. I thought the guy who came to interview him was trying to struggle to stay professional and not cry. Guy is inspiring. Ask Catherine. Dear Catherine, there is much evidence indicating that the Apollo moon landings were staged and never happened, and that we never landed on the moon via that technology. We may have landed on the moon using other technology, but do you believe that the Apollo moon landings may have been faked? It's interesting. The best thing I've ever seen on this, or the most interesting, and I believe it's probably too, is Jay Widener's, I think it's a 2-DVD set where he describes his theory that the moon landings were real, but that the Department of Defense hired Stanley Kubrick to make a film that could be shown to the public so that they wouldn't see the real landing, they'd see a mocked landing, and that the movie 2001 Space Odyssey was essentially cover for making that movie. And Jay also says, as part of the deal, Kubrick was given a deal that from then on he could make whatever he wanted. I happen to believe that is the most logical, compelling argument I've ever heard of what really happened. And to be blunt, if I were running DOD, I would, you know, I could see wanting to do that and not wanting to show to the public whatever you found, but have an alternative to show to the public, you know, but keep the real films and the real story under wraps, and not just because you want to be non-transparent about certain things, but because the world is full of enemies and you're in a competition with them. You don't want them seeing all the information. So I think the moon landings were real, but I think the film shown to the public easily could have been filmed in a studio out wherever Stanley Kubrick was. It also would explain why Kubrick suddenly died right after Eyes Wide Shut, because I think somebody said, you know, we don't like that deal anymore. And the only way to renege on it is to, unfortunately, kill Kubrick. So I have real questions about whether his death was natural or not. Dear Catherine, in your opinion, how much money does the Federal Reserve and their policies end up costing the U.S. taxpayers every year? I have never costed it out. It would be an interesting exercise to do so, but it's very tricky because it all depends on the assumptions. A lot of the costs of what the Federal Reserve does come from the intersection of the Federal Reserve policy with numerous others, particularly what's going on at the Treasury. So it's one of those and things. But I'd much rather cost out what the costs look like of running the world by force with fiat currency as opposed to simply optimizing through markets and different kind of systems and the alternative. Please remember that the Federal Reserve pays all of its dividends, its profits, over to the Treasury. So in theory, they can say they make money for the U.S. government, at least. One thing I will say is I did cost out the cost of a negative return on investment to taxpayers of government appropriations, credits, and regulation. What I was able to prove, if you just optimize federal government investment in places and credit, you could increase wealth within a relatively short period by about a multiple of 6 times. So the significant increase on private equity was tremendous. Now, the problem is a lot of corporate interests would see falling falling equity. So it's not everybody's win, but I saw a net increase that was very, very significant. So that's on the fiscal side. And then if you add the monetary side, it's much more. If you let technology, if you loosen up what technology can be introduced, it's even more. So as I've said before, I think the current existing financial wealth or equity wealth on planet Earth is 1% or less of what it could be. It's quite extraordinary. But that gets into real issues of control. And of course, then you have to bring transparency to a whole series of things that the leadership doesn't want to bring transparency to. And the question is, back to, of course, who are they and what are the risks they're managing? Why do they need secrecy? I wrote a commentary, Musings on Nuclear Testing, and got some great response. Let me give you two of them. Hello, Catherine. This is an interesting topic. My husband has just finished reading an excellent book, Command and Control, by Eric Schlosser, also the author of Fast Food Nation. Command and Control is an alarming account of how unsafe we are from our own doings, right? The implications behind some of the on climate change is that the individual, the sort of general population, is to blame for all this environmental damage, which if you look at what a small group of people are doing, you can make a different argument. Okay, other comment. There have been over 20 nuclear bombs detonated in Earth's thermosphere. Many were over 1 megaton. Google Operation Fishbowl and Starfish Prime. Someone wise once said, we are so worried that the Russians would nuke us, we nuked ourselves in the process. We hear a lot about finding a cure for cancer. Let's find out what is causing cancer. Below is from Counterpunch. This is up at the subscriber comments, so you should go take a look at that link. It's very interesting. The St. Louis II study, which had been largely forgotten for decades, experienced a rebirth in 2001. Washington University officials were startled to find hundreds of boxes of teeth not used in the study stored in a remote ammunition bunker. Each tooth is contained in a small envelope attached to a 3x5 card identifying the tooth and its donor. The school transferred the collection of about 85,000 teeth to the Radiation and Public Health Project Research Group, which was conducting its own study of SR90 in baby teeth near nuclear reactors. The officials recognized that these teeth could be used for a study of cancer risk of baby boomers now in their 40s and 50s. A sample of the 85,000 teeth were used to locate cancer survivors and those who died of cancer. In December 2010, the International Journal of Health Services published findings of the study, i.e. that boomers born between 1959 and 61 who died of cancer had SR90 levels in their teeth more than twice greater than those the same age who are alive and healthy. While more research is needed to estimate casualties, it appears likely that the government figure of 15,000 U.S. cancer deaths from the fallout is quite low. Take a look at the video I put up in that commentary, Musings on Nuclear Testing. It will show you the global nuclear testing over the 20th century. It's quite nerve-wracking. Let's go to the movies. Because we were talking about the oil card this week, I wanted to put up the prize. It's PBS's documentary based on Daniel Yergin's Pulitzer Prize-winning book by the same title, The Prize, The Epic Quest for Oil, Money, and Power. It's kind of the Bible of the official story. I always find official stories useful, not complete, and certainly not sufficient. But they give you a structural outline of the history of the major conglomerates and some of the major geopolitics around oil. Lots of good pictures. I always think the extraordinary sort of collection of photography and videos from a long period of time really help. So I think it's a good basic primer for the basic dates and history of the oil industry. Again, it doesn't give you anywhere near the full story, but I think it's very good background. So, and PBS usually does a pretty good job on official histories. It's long, it's 6 hours, but again, a very good background if you're interested in American history and the geopolitics of oil. Our interview this week is with one of my favorite people, Jim Norman. If you have not read his book, The Oil Card, between his book, The Oil Card, our interviews on the Soleri Report with Jim Norman, they're all in the archive, as well as our interview with Ann Williamson about what happened in Russia during the 90s after the fall of the Soviet Union and what that has to do with going on in Ukraine today. If you really want to understand the squabble with Russia and the Ukraine, you absolutely want to listen to this interview, the other ones with Jim Norman, read his book, and listen to that interview with Ann Williamson. It will give you a whole completely different take on what's going on. Norman was editor for in the oil and gas editor at Business Week, then at Forbes. He got knocked out of Forbes by telling the truth about Iran-Contra and ended up sort of bopping around to some alternative places, and then went to Platts, which is the premier oil trade magazine. So this is somebody who has 30 years of very deep knowledge. Usually a couple of subscribers get upset when he talks about fracking. Please don't get too upset. There are many, you know, the arguments on those. It's a more complicated discussion, and Jim and I get into it in one of our older interviews. But if you want to understand what's happening geopolitically, great quote from Norman that I just have to mention. He says, because you're basically talking about how the United States implements sort of the oil standard on the dollar and economic warfare globally, working through managed prices. And at one point, Norman says, he says, just remember, this is economic warfare. And economic warfare always comes with a thick bodyguard of lies. Great quote. But if you can understand what's going on in the oil markets, and this is the, if you watch the prize for the official story, and then you listen to the complete Jim Norman series in our archives, and this one in Ann Williamson, you will understand more than 99% of the population, I assure you, including the people on Wall Street. Closing, have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. We have so much to be thankful for. So it's really a good thing to pause, rest, and count our blessings. So I hope you enjoy the whole Thanksgiving holidays over the next week. On Thanksgiving, because we're thankful for you and your good health, we're posting a new interview with Alan Phillips, wonderful attorney, top expert in vaccine exemptions. So important to know your rights and be able to exercise those. I'm getting to the point where I can't go to a CVS or a Walgreens without those terrible signs saying, get your vaccinations. It's getting very aggressive. I won't be doing Money in Markets because it's the last week of the month. So I'll be back with Money in Markets on December 4th. We're going to have Patty Kemmerer, CPA, wonderful CPA, my CPA, talking about year-end tax planning. So please, if you have questions about your year-end fiscal financial tax planning, please get them into me as soon as you can. So I make sure I do that interview. I'll be interviewing her on December 3rd. And then December 11th, Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders. That market's tough, under a lot of pressure. I'm concerned if we break 1,100 on gold, it could go to 800, 700. It could be a very big drop. So I'm glad Franklin's going to be coming back to do that, because we have a lot to talk about. So until next week with Alan Phillips, and then back with Money Markets on December 4th, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.